Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM. What a day. What a day today. What a day today. You know, I could tell you in the studio with me today, Dr. Bernard Starr. That was quite a speech
yesterday. It was incredible.
It was an incredible thing. It a couple of things bothered me, you know, seeing the vice president there in a wheelchair because, you know, as he said, he was lifting some boxes yesterday. And I was saying right down at the end, the guy's lying to me. The vice president, you don't lift boxes and you hurt your back so bad that you wind up in a wheelchair. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I'm looking at it. I'm saying, oh, here's a way. And I didn't like the hugs.
Well, maybe it's an expression of his dilemma with the loss of power.
I don't know. All I know is it wasn't funny to me. I'm looking at it and I'm saying, okay, here's another lie. And then all those hugs between Obama and Bush, I mean, that didn't feel good to me. And I felt it was kind of I was being talked at. You know, I felt that I was being almost pontificated. You know, we got to, now we're going to. And I said to myself, okay, this is what I need. I have an O-H. I have a great, wonderful feeling about what our potential for this future is. But I've also got my eyes open. I'm also watching to say, you know, anybody can get duped anytime. So today, I wanted to talk about people's vulnerability to being duped. I'm not saying the president is duping us. But I'm saying the stuff is there. You look at it and you say, hey, why is he hugging George Bush? Why is he laughing at George Bush's jokes so strongly? Why is he kissing George Bush's wife?
Well, isn't it just part of a ritual and trying to be kind of cordial with this transition?
I could certainly...
Just kind of making nice.
I could give you that thing. I could give that to you, except my feeling about it was, wait a minute, I didn't know you were going to make so nice. In fact, the press made a good... made a lot of comments about what good friends they've become. And I'm saying, wait a minute.
Well, that's a bit of a stretch.
Well, I don't know. You see, I don't know. So I keep my eyes open. Now, when I keep my eyes open, I say, gee, I was hoping it was going to be bigger than that. Gee, I was hoping it was going to have a lot of heart in it. Gee, I was hoping it wouldn't be just pontificating and saying, and we, and inspirational, and trying to make it a great... It wasn't a great speech. It was good. It was nice. It was wonderful. There were a lot of people there. All you had to do was get up and say, hey, we did it. You know, and everybody would have just wept.
Well, yeah, that would have been enough, but I think the expectation was for a speech. And I think if he actually gave a major speech on the financial situation or foreign policy, it would have fallen into the background because the event itself was so powerful and dominant.
I think he should have had everybody sing America the Beautiful, which I know other people did. I think it would have been one thing, you know, hold hands. I remember once he gave a lecture for the Association for Humanistic Psychology back in the 70s, and I was so resentful of the fact that we lost the right to have a country. I had 1,000 people in the audience, 1,000. It was a convention, and I was a keynote speaker. And I said, let's not give them the flag. Let's not give the government everything. And this was my Vietnam protest. I said, let's not let them own the country. Let's believe that we own our country. So let's sing America the Beautiful. I remember the tears that were shed by these people as they sang it. And they kind of cried as they could sing because they wanted to have a song of their country. Then I remember following that, I got major criticism for being somebody who was in favor of the war. Because I was trying to tell people you could still have it. Well, I was hoping to see a lot of that yesterday, and maybe we will yet see it.
Well, I thought that a lot of that spirit was there, though, certainly.
Yes, it was there before he even got there.
Millions in that crowd.
Absolutely. Do you know that we saw all those, Bernie, for the first time in our lives, we saw an inauguration with no protests? Yes, you get that? There was no protest.
And a very positive feeling about right. America, which was lacking in your
in
presentation.
Every other. Sure, absolutely.
So we've come a long way since
absolutely.
The 70s.
But people are always subject to fraud and gullibility.
Bubbles.
Let's take a look at that today. There's a, financial scams, we hear about those all the time, especially with the thing that we heard about Bernie Madoff and so on and so forth. But let's look at some of this frailty, the vulnerability to seduction that people have. And let's start it off. I mean, it goes all the way back in time.
Well, it goes way back, and you might say it's part of the human drama or the part of the human comedy. And, yes, it goes way back. We could go back to Adam and Eve.
The Bible.
The initial seduction.
Yeah, and the apple.
And the apple.
You know,
and
here's an apple. Eat the apple of truth, and you will have the wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth of it is it sells your soul. Is that
yes,
the way it works?
And it transformed the world at that point. So, the stories go way back. You can go back to Greek times, the story of the Trojan horse. Here you have these nations at war, and then the Trojans decide they're going to leave, and they leave a gift behind, the horse. And it's welcomed, and it's pulled through the gates, and there are soldiers inside, and it led to defeat.
Didn't somebody want to look in the mouth at one point, and somebody said, don't look a gift horse in the mouth?
Yes, well, that's where the expression, or don't beware of Greeks bearing gifts.
And then, of course, in politics, recently we saw the illusion of the WMDs in Iraq. There's another one that was purported, that was put on people, and people just ate that one up.
And many people still believe it.
They still believe it's there, right? Because they want to believe that they were not duped. See, they still want to believe that that's there. But then we have, you know, this kind of pathological science, this thing and medical fads. You know, they have make-believe science. Science has proven that men, white men, unequivocally, where does unequivocally come from? Unequivocally have bigger brains than all other races. That was one thing. We used to do brain size studies. Remember, they would do the bumps in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And it would prove that men are more intelligent, white men are more intelligent than black men, and that white men are more intelligent than women, and white men are, and whoever's doing the study was more intelligent than whoever wasn't doing the study. It's basically the way it worked. And they had this artificial science. But we get it nowadays when we see things like, you know, in science, oh, you take an estrogen patch and it's good for you. It makes you postpone menopause and makes a woman stay a woman until they find out it may give you breast cancer. Or they give you something like, on the nutrition side, we give you St. John's wort. It's just a benign way you could have St. John's wort and get rid of your depression, and it turns out that it could be toxic, as toxic as any of the other drugs. Gullibility is all over the place.
Yeah. Yes, there are those people also who will tell you how to live forever or to extend your life in huge chunks, and they'll come up with a formula for it. There's a guy in Oxford, England, who says we're on the verge of achieving immortality. On the other hand, you speak to Leonard Hayflick, the guy who's known for the Hayflick limit, the limit of human life, and he says we know zero about human aging.
So we also have great fairy tales. Little Red Riding Hood was all about duping somebody.
Yes.
Hey, I'm not a wolf. No, I'm just a sheep. Don't be afraid of me. And the Emperor's New Clothing.
And yet, at the same time, we have all of these age-old sayings that sometimes we're seduced into ignoring. You know, what goes up must come down. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And, you know, Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead also had a song about it. It was called, "'Cause When Life Looks Like Easy Street, There Is Danger at Your Door."
Hmm. So there may be some knowledge in that. We're going to take your calls today also. We're going to be talking about this, but, you know, there seems to be something about the madness of the crowd, and we're going to examine what it is that makes people do this. Let's take a look at some of the things that have happened to people. In the 1980s, there was a thing with Lloyd's of London. Do you remember that, Bernie? Lloyd's of London came around.
Yes, there was something about that, of their stock being inflated.
They sold more shares of Lloyd's of London than existed because people thought, Lloyd's of London, how prestigious. I can own a part of Lloyd's of London. And it would end up being a very, very big scam, cost a lot of people money. And then there was the tulip story. What happened with the tulips?
Well, that story
in Amsterdam,
that
was really
amazing.
That goes
back to Holland in 1636.
Now, that was huge.
Yeah,
that's
the classic story of madness and craze. In 1636, there was a relative prosperity in Holland at the time, and people were buying luxury items, and tulips were considered a luxury item. But the mania for them progressed that the prices just kept escalating, and people were buying them and selling them.
Now, I never understood the tulip thing. I mean, these are just tulips. These are flowers.
Yes. It's hard to understand, but they were making money at it. Sometimes the price within a month went up 100%.
Guilders.
And eventually, at one point, some rare tulips were selling for what today the equivalent amount would be $100,000 for a tulip. And I read somewhere that at one point the entire economy of Holland was based on the tulip. And, of course, then they had the big crash.
And then they all smoked a lot of marijuana, and they said, hey, let's, what were we thinking?
But that is truly
but
amazing.
But the big crash was that, wait a minute, tulips don't have any value. You know, tulips. I mean, when you think about gold, I was reading the other day.
Oh, by the way, the tulips were selling for greater than the cost of gold.
Gold, higher than the cost of gold. Does gold have any value? We think of gold as having great value. I read in a National Geographic recently, if you took all the gold that was ever mined since the beginning of history, right, it would fill two Olympic-sized swimming pools and no more.
Really? Wow.
Now, isn't that shocking? Isn't that boggling? Wait a minute. Isn't a pyramid made of gold? You know? No, they weren't. But if you take all the gold ever mined, and put it, it would fit. So is gold have value?
Well, if everybody believes it has value, the difference with the tulip is only the Dutch believed that the tulip had value.
So they bought and sold it to each other.
Yes.
And they bought and sold it to each other, much like people who are seeing houses nowadays as one of the ways of making money. I became a housing investor. A young man came to me recently and he said, I'm getting my real estate license. I'm going to go into real estate now. And I called another friend, and I said, what do you think about a young man going into real estate now? He said, this is somebody who always must make bad choices. Because to go into real estate now is way after 5 years ago, okay. But now you're going to make money in real estate? Those are tulips.
Yes.
You know, those are tulips. Real estate is tulips.
Well, the game is over for the moment.
The British South Sea Company was formed in 1711. And promised a monopoly on trade to the Spanish colonies. It lured investors with the promise of riches. Prices of the shares in the British South Sea Company spiked. Sir Isaac Newton, remember Isaac Newton? Old poor guy, lost $1 million, right, because he couldn't see the apple falling.
So intelligence has very little to do with it, obviously.
Little to do with it. Well, that's part of what they say. They say one of the reasons that we become vulnerable is a social reason. And they say there are four factors: situation, cognition, personality, and emotion that lead us vulnerable to these kind of things. Starting with situation, it says that every gullible act occurs when an individual is presented with a social challenge that he has to solve.
Yes, well, what's the social challenge? The social challenge is that somebody's presenting you with something that they claim has great value, and you may have a lot of confidence in that person. And basically, I think that we all have trust. We have trust in institutions, we have trust in experts, we have trust in professionals, and we couldn't function without that, if we had to really be suspicious and examine everything that we did and question everything we did, we'd never be able to leave the house in the morning. But nevertheless, we do have to make a decision. Somebody's presenting us with something, saying, invest in it, it's valuable, it's worth something, and how do you evaluate that?
Well, the situation is also, the social pressure is, can you not, if you're somebody who keeps your money under the mattress, and someone comes along and says, well, come on, put it in treasury bills and get 2% interest. It's safer than your mattress because your mattress could catch on fire. And then turns around and laughs to other people and says, ah, ha, ha, she keeps her money under the mattress. You have a social pressure to at least join what other people are doing, which may be putting your money in the bank.
Yes, it's very compelling also. During the dot-com craze, I remember, my mother-in-law, 85 at the time, called from Florida, and she wanted us to invest some of her money in the dot-coms. She was in treasuries and CDs, and she said all her friends are talking about how much money they're making, and conventional wisdom would tell you that when your mother-in-law calls and wants to
that's
get into
that. That's just about the time, yeah.
And, of course, there's that famous story. I don't know if it's true or if it's urban legend that goes back to the great crash of 29, and presumably J.P. Morgan left his office and came down for lunch, and he was having his shoes shined when the shoe shine man gave him a tip on a stock. And the legend says he went upstairs and sold everything, right, weeks before the crash.
Kind of in my experience, that's always been the case. When it gets down to the point where people are doing it, now, over the last 5 years, people have had this pressure to buy homes. And I remember meeting a lot of young people who were saying, oh, you have to buy a house because the house is going up in value. You have to buy a house. You have to buy a house. Well, if you're somebody who wants to have a home, that's one thing. If you've waited your whole life to have a home of your own somewhere in a nice, quiet part of the world, and you just want to have a home, that's one thing. But if you think you have to have a home because the social pressure is, have 2.3 babies, get married, have babies, having to have a house, have a car, people just went right into that, and they hocked. And they said, okay, it's all right to go into debt to do this. And they did it with each other. And many of our listeners are saying, that's exactly what I did. You couldn't escape that home pressure. You couldn't escape the family pressure. Your mother wouldn't let you not have children. You know, that pressure yes. was there. So in that social situation, when we talk about situations, we talk about the social environment in which people get caught up in things. Second to that, we have cognition.
Let me just add one thing sure. to the social thing, because I think there's another dimension to that. With the home purchases, there were a lot of people who didn't believe they could afford homes, but they had friends who were, you know, buying homes, and it seemed to be working. And they go to the bank. Let's say somebody who owns a grocery store, let's say, and the American dream is to have a home, and he and his wife feel they can't afford this. But they're persuaded to see a loan person at the bank. So they go into the bank, and you're talking to a guy with a suit, with a title, representing a prestigious bank, name bank, and he's telling you, you could do this. And not only that, he's willing to give you the money to start it, even though we know that that there was not truth in advertising there, and a lot of people got caught up in that. But that's very irresistible. I mean, here you're in you have a whole institutional support for this. How can somebody question that or resist it? So a lot of people got sucked into that. And, of course, today a lot of people are blaming those subprime mortgage people, saying, oh, they shouldn't have done it. Didn't they know they couldn't afford it? But they're not looking at that social context.
Yes, and in that social context, even the subprime people, not even the subprime people, even the bankers, who said, I'm making more loans than you're making to his friend next door, I'm going to get a raise. They were in competition to make loans. They thought they were doing good things.
Yes.
A lot of those bankers thought they were just doing, I'm getting people to get homes. What a wonderful
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. I'm
you
helping.
Can have your home. And look, you have a credit score. I know somebody who had a credit score over 800 who has never done a thing in their lives. They just had a high credit score. They never had great debt they paid off. They never did anything. They paid their credit cards on time. But why would they have a credit score of 800? And the bank looked at that and said, that's it. Give you a loan. And if that person couldn't afford it, they would be losing their homes. Now, so what is this gullibility? What is this thing that happens to us? Well, those are two of the pressures. One of them is the situation, the social situation. Now, cognition. What do you think, Bernie? Cognition is getting what's going on, right?
Well, cognition deals with what you see, and the question is what you see what you get? So we're talking about knowledge, we're talking about information, we're talking about how you assess that information. And, of course, a lot of people aren't in the position to assess information, and often they have to rely on trust.
And so cognition doesn't really make much sense.
For a lot of people, I don't think it does, because they're – well, look, I know somebody, a friend, who's very compulsive, okay, and he investigates everything very carefully before he buys something. So if I'm in the market for something that I know that he bought or that he investigated, I'll call him up and say – and he'll want to give me all the details. Hey, look, skip over the details. I have confidence in you. Because I know you looked at this thoroughly, which one should I buy? And I'll buy that one.
Because you know he put all that time into it.
Yes. Now, if it proves eventually wrong, I may lose my confidence in that person. But initially, we all have a certain degree of trust, and we rely on other people's cognition.
Well, now a new form, just for people to know, there's a new form of hustle kind of going on. You're no longer being offered... You know, you're no longer being offered that we can now give you the big returns. They used to say, I'll give you big returns. Now nobody believes that anymore. The new one is we're going to give you modest gains. You'll make 2% a year, 3% a year, and people perk their heads, but your money will be safe. This safety number is going to be the new hustle. Your money will be safe. We're going to have your money locked up. It's going to be safe. Nobody could take it away. That's the new thing that people are worried about. How do I stay safe? That's going to be the new hustle. And then, of course, there comes this new one, which is on the Internet. What is the 419, I think it's called?
Oh, that's the one where you promised a million somebody in Nigeria or some other country has an inheritance or access to huge
amounts of money. It's called an inheritance scheme. That's right.
Or they have money in a bank that they can't get out, and somehow you're going to help them do this, and you're going to get millions for your contribution to this.
So what we basically have to say to you is there is no free lunch. If anybody comes to you and says you won the lottery, just sign up for it now. You won this. You were chosen as, right?
Yes.
That's a free lunch. They're very, very few. And I don't think I've never seen one work out like that. And then especially if somebody sends you a letter from Africa saying, you know, I have money and I'm stuck over here and I have no way of getting out of here, would you please send me your name to use?
Well, and particularly since... these requests and these offers from now, possibly your best friend who's offering you millions of dollars, is never addressed to you personally, though. And that's something I think people should be aware of, that if it's just addressed to my friend, they don't really know your name, they don't know who you are, and they're at step one to suck you into this.
And the idea is here, you see, look, friends, illusions. We're going to talk more about this when we get back from our break, but first let's talk about illusions. If you don't give me illusions, I don't want to be alive. You know what I mean? I mean, the biggest illusion of all, most of us deny our death. We don't want to hear about death. Don't talk about death. Don't do a death program. Don't sell me death benefits. We want the illusion that we will be alive forever. That's it, and we like illusions. And we want to believe in magic. We want, if a lion appears inside a cage when somebody lights a puff of smoke, we want to believe that. I mean, at least show it to me. Maybe I won't believe it, but at least show it to me. Illusions are something that the world has always gone on. It kind of keeps the spice of life going.
Well, and you just mentioned another illusion before, the swing from making these huge profits now to the illusion of safety.
Illusion of
and
safety.
Ultimately,
give me an illusion.
Is there safety, ultimately, or is that an illusion?
But, you see, I want illusions. Now, here's the point. What makes people become so frail, so vulnerable? Well, a number of things make people vulnerable, and we're going to be talking about those. Number one, a lot of emotions make you vulnerable. One is if you feel powerless. If you feel powerless, boy, somebody can come along and sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. If you feel scared, somebody can say, hey, you know, I know how to make you safe. If you feel greedy, somebody could come along and say to you, you want to be able to get something that nobody else can get? If you feel angry, somebody can come to you and say, you want to get even with the government? Here's what we're going to do. If you feel needy, but look at all of these feelings. All of these feelings are saying to us, we need something. Please give me an illusion or something that will make me feel better. So when we watch our president taking office, we say, sell me, give me an illusion, will you please? And one of the things about the speech yesterday was there was no real illusions. Nothing up there. A little whisper of, you know, don't mess with us because we're Americans and we'll punch you in the nose. But there was not, we are going to bring this around, we're going to turn this around, we're going to move in and we're going to do it and I have the answer. And no, there wasn't any of that. So what we heard was the absence of illusions. People celebrated the presence of a magnificent thing happening. But what they didn't get.
Well, at the same time, that may have just been an antidote to the illusions that were created during the campaign, and especially with our whole society coming off the Great Fall, there's always a tendency to swing to the other side now to develop some other grand illusion. And I think Obama was speaking to that, saying, hey, gang, you know, let me take the edge off that. These are monstrous problems, and I don't want to present you with illusions. But wait, because we know from history that the illusions always come.
What do you mean the illusions always come?
Well, as you say, people need illusions in order to get through the day.
We want one. We want you to tell us that everything is going to be okay. We want you to tell us that you've got a solution. We want you to sell us something that's going to have great meaning. We want you to take things away from us. We want you to make us not responsible. We want you to save us from our own folly. You know, it's like that's what bailout is. You know, save the banks from what they did. We want you to do that. You know, we want this. We don't want to deal with what reality
right.
is.
Right. We want to call it bailout that rather than life support for, you know, a patient near the end.
Mm-hmm. So if you have the beginning of this is you are vulnerable to fraud. You are vulnerable to it. Somebody calls you up and they want to come in your office and they say you're vulnerable to it. Somebody wants to steal your identity. You know, if you decide to live by credit card, your identity is vulnerable. Does that mean you should not live by credit card but instead just carry enough cash around with you all the time that you've got to be able to spend on things? Does that mean that's the way it should go? No, we're not saying that. But there are risks with everything, and the more you put yourself out there, the more propensity there is or tendency there is for somebody to come along and say, hey, maybe that's a mark. Maybe that's somebody I could get something from. Who would – I mean, think about coyotes. Think about the bottom feeders in the ocean. Without them, we'd have dirty oceans. You know, a catfish sees a shark eating something up there and says, I think I'll hang out underneath the catfish, underneath the shark. Maybe there'll be some left over for me, or maybe I could grab a piece of food. That's the way it is. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We have to take a short break and play you a little music, but we will tell you that it is 1:30 here at WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, and we will be back with you after this music, and we'll take some of your calls. Here's a nice piece of music I meant to bring to you today.
Looking for something I've never seen, alone in a mountain. The place that I'm from, the place that I'm in, a city I've never been. But I found a friend, or should I say a foe? Said there's a few things you should know. We don't want you to see, we come and we go, it'll take on tomorrow.
Listening to The Fray from Trust Me. Yes, you know, and just to make it clear, I mean, part of what I thought was wonderful about yesterday's speech was that we weren't getting illusions. We weren't. That's what you're saying too, Bernie,
yes,
right?
Yes.
You know, that every president we've seen before then has been selling us with illusions. All right, now we're here, and now we're going, you know. This is kind of beautiful. We're going to have to fight it out. But, you know, the magic was that there were no fireworks. I mean, the magic was that, all right, guys, here we are. We're in it. But I need a hug. I tell you, I need a hug from everybody who was waiting for this to happen. I want that whole world to give out a hug. You know, yo, Y-O should be the new expression. You know what it means? It means, yes, Obama. Right? Y-O, yo. Hey, 212-209-2900 is our telephone number here. 212-209-2900. I'm trying not to do comments, but, oh, hold on a second there. That's a very good thing. You know, my friends, I need something from you. Just hold on with me a minute, okay? Just stay with me a little second.
I'll be right back.
What an unusual world today is. 212. Klezmer Music, you're listening. 212-209-2900. I thought I had my engineer on the phone. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind with Dr. Bernie Starr. We're talking about how we have a tendency to want illusions and fall for things. And, you know, it's not to be in judgment of that. Too good to be true is always a lesson. You know, it's something too good to be true. There are times we've had people who apply for jobs, and very often, you know, you've heard this expression. People say, you're overqualified for a job. And a person will say, oh, no, I'm not overqualified. Yes, I have a PhD in mathematics, and I do want the job as a receptionist. Uh-huh. So you say to somebody, well, that's, you know, I can't give you the job because you're overqualified, but you're really saying you're too good to be true. Too good to be true is something that is a lesson you learn later in life. Too good to be true. You know, it's say, yeah, it just sounds terrific. A person's coming over to you and saying, look, here's the house. I saw an ad on TV the other day. You can buy this house for $537. It's very simple. You go over to where they auction off houses, and the government takes these houses, and then they auction them, and you get in there, and you buy it for $537. You can have this beautiful house worth $200,000. Good. Spend your time doing it. Too good to be true. It's not going to happen that way. We have a lot of callers on the line. Bernie, you wanted to say something?
Yes. Years ago on Candid Camera, they had a bit where they had a guy standing on Fifth Avenue selling $20 bills for $5, and he couldn't sell any of them.
I remember. You can't do it. It's hard to even give away money. It's hard to even give it away.
But that even creates a greater puzzle than why, when we're presented with these situations where it's too good to be true, we still go for it.
You know, I remember it was Thanksgiving one year. Thanksgiving, I was going out to Long Island. I had rented a car because I was going out to visit a family in Long Island. And they wound up renting me a bus. I got to Hertz and they said, all we have is a bus because it was snowing. And all the cars are taken. And I said, but you promised me a car. They said, you can have this bus if you want the bus. It was big. It was a big van.
A real bus.
Big van, like a small bus, like the size of a school bus. So I said, well, there's no other thing, so I'll take it. So I took it, and I went out, and it snowed. And I came back about 11 or 12 o'clock, and it was snowing. Thanksgiving. People were freezing. So I'm walking toward, I'm driving towards my place in Manhattan, and I see a bus stop. People are freezing. So I pull by the bus stop, and I open the bus door. And I said, would you like a lift? And they looked inside, and they said, no, thank you. I said, no, it's all right. I'll just give you a lift. I'll drive you. No, no. No, thank you. I was with a friend of mine, and my friend said to me, that's kind of strange. It's really okay. No, thank you. Went to the next bus stop, and I did something different. I said, okay, I'm going straight across town. I'm only stopping at bus stops, and it's 75 cents. Because it was 75 cents. It was a fare at the time. And people got on. See,
that's
people got on.
It's
a true story. Absolutely true. I lived it. And then once they got on, they realized that there was, you know, it was no hustle, and they started having a good time and sharing things with each other. But as long as I said 75 cents and I only stop at bus stops, right, then people were willing to join me. Right? Well, I learned. 212-209-2900. Let's take a call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. We'll take the first caller.
Hi. My name is Rachel. I'm calling
Hello,
from
Rachel.
Brooklyn. And my parents always taught me everything that glitters is not gold. And I appreciate the fact that Barack Obama was truthful instead of selling the illusion.
That's right.
And I definitely do appreciate that. And I just wanted to drop that in your ear. And that's basically it. And thank you so
well,
much.
Well, Rachel, wait a minute. Yes. When your parents used to tell you
yes.
everything that glitters is not gold.
Yes.
What were they trying to tell you? What were they trying to warn you about? Watch out for guys who are hustling you. What guy? Watch out for what? They were trying to warn you about something.
Watch out when people say, yes, you can have this for this amount. And, you know, at the end of the deal, it's always something more, you know. Because in life, nothing is free. You have to pay for it regardless of what it is.
Isn't it a pity?
It is.
Isn't that a pity, Rachel? Jeez, you know, I would love to give you something for free. Somebody walked in my office the other day, and I had a ball that they hadn't played with since they were kids. And I said, here, take this ball.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I can't take that ball. I said, why can't you take this ball? He said, because it's your ball. I said, it's all right. I'll give it to you. It's now your ball. Mm-hmm. And you could see he had the hardest time taking it. Cause
you know, I think people feel like they might have to repay you in some way, because people are always looking for something in return, you know. And that's our society, unfortunately. You know, I've only been on this earth for 23 years, and I see that, you know, and the older I get, I'm seeing that more.
Well, Rachel, do you ever give anything away without asking for anything back?
Of course, you know.
So I guess you change the rules every day.
The status quo, yes. You know, I try, you know, even though I don't have but so much, but I have no problem doing that. And
every
I don't
act of kindness.
Yes, and I don't look for anything in return, you know.
23 years old, God, you are going to be giving wonderful things to this planet. Thank you so much.
Thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure, and thank you for being a part of WBAI. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Shifra. That's my Hebrew name. It's Leora. My question is, thank you so much, Bernard, and Armand, awesome, awesome material. Number one, what is the need that allows you to be vulnerable? And how can you recognize that you are? And the person who's, you know, taking you off, he can smell you. These people can smell that type of person.
Well, what do you think, Leora? What do you think would be your most vulnerable condition that would make you get hustled?
Well, all right. I'll go back in my journey. I had a certain amount of money, and someone that I trusted told me he was an intermediary with someone that was going to make some money. And I trusted the first person who was a friend of mine. And sure enough, that person gave that money to this second party. And, of course, next thing I know, we flew the coop.
Yeah.
So what was my need at that moment?
Well, there you...
You know what I think? Oh, I got it. You have to be trusting an emunah. They call that in the Jewish, in the Hebrew, you know, the Judaic world, munim b'tachem, trust and faith. But you have to still know that you're living in a world where this goes on. So you have to differentiate. You have to teach yourself how to differentiate the difference between being taken and not being taken. It's called consciousness and awareness.
Good, Leora. Thank you very much.
Oh, but you didn't answer my question.
I'm going to answer your question,
okay.
Leora.
The need, how to recognize one, and how to know that these other people have a con semantic, repertoire.
Yeah, I hear you. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Well, you know, I mean, the main thing is the need. And what Leora is saying is that the very fact that you have needs means that you're vulnerable. You're not feeling good. You're either feeling manic. You know, manic people, boy, did they get hustled. Manic are people who are big spenders, you know, and they, when you have a manic phase, you have somebody who's got irrational exuberance, and they're very exuberant, and they're going around, and boy, they spot you in a shop, and they could sell you anything, because that's one, the manic state. But the other state is the state where you just feel lonely and you feel down and you feel vulnerable. And loneliness brings a lot of hustle, you know? You're lonely and you need somebody to be kind to you, and you look for it, and somebody comes along and says, okay, they need some kindness. Now, I know people who travel off to different countries, and I know this as being both young men or single women. They go to a country, and there are people waiting at the airplane for people who arrive. And the minute they arrive, they offer you company. Hey, you want a guide? Hey, you want a partner? Hey, you want to go dancing? Hey, you want romance? Hey, what do you want? Assuming that if you're traveling alone, you're vulnerable. And assuming that if you're vulnerable and they offer you their selves, it's not so much of a hustle, because you will understand that somewhere they'll be expecting something back. So vulnerability could be loneliness, or it could be any emotion of something that needs to be filled, some minus that needs to be filled. And in the other people, how do you spot it? You know, you really don't have to spot it. The truth is, it's all based on your needs. Sincerity could be faked. Everything can be fake. You know, you can look into somebody's eyes, and if you're a psychopath, you can make them believe that you're all good and all fine. So you give up on it. You just, you know, just don't sign the mortgage. Just don't turn over the house.
Well, also, because we're all so needy, that we want to win. We want to be winners. And we want to feel connected also. And when we're offered some opportunity for a win, big success of some kind, it makes us feel connected. And that's part of the escape from loneliness, the escape from depression. It may be a jump start out of depression of, wow, I could be a winner now. You know, I could overcome this sense of need.
Well, you see, even being a winner very often comes from some unfelt need for a lack of power. I mean, I see people who go into hotel rooms and they steal the wallpaper. They steam off the wallpaper, put it in rolls, and put it in their suitcases and go away. Hotel owners will tell you, people steal. I mean, that's it. Basically, people steal. They will take things out of little bottles in the refrigerator and they'll replace them with water. They have the way to do it, you know? And it's basically, I'm going to get even with you guys. I'm going to take advantage of you because you're taking advantage of me. When you get caught in that mental set, when you're saying, I'm going to get even, you're already trapped. You're already lost. 212-209-2900. Let me take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. I'm sorry to keep you waiting so long. 212-209-2900. Hi there, you're on the air. We've got the calls lined up. They're just coming to us. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Vincent.
Hello, Vincent.
I found speech to be actually filled with very illusions. I would say illusions.
Okay.
And
what were the illusions?
Talk of God.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Talk of religion. I found it to be a very religious speech.
I wondered about that. I wondered why. Could you turn down your radio, by the way? I hear...
Oh, sure.
I heard the echo in the background.
Excuse me. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay, Vincent. Yeah,
okay.
You're a guy who doesn't like to be... You have an issue with religion itself because you believe that there's a lot of fraud in religion, don't you?
When it comes to governments especially, I don't have an issue with religious people or religion in general. But I really do think it should be kept out of government.
And so there all the God references kind of bothered you.
Yes.
What else? Anything else bother you?
Well, no, that was really it. I do like him very much as a man, and I think he can make a very good president for us. But the talk of God and religion can be very divisive for those
sure.
of us who aren't Christian, who aren't Jewish, who aren't affiliated with any kind of faith.
Sure, and there's an easy tendency to rationalize it and say, well, he was just hugging George Bush because... he was saying goodbye, or he was laughing at his jokes because he was being polite. Well, I don't want a polite president who laughs at George Bush's jokes. And he made a lot of God references, but he didn't make the illusions. And he didn't make too many other illusions about how easy it's going to be. You know, so I'm in agreement with you, Vincent. I think we've got... I think we're going to watch it closely with admiration and
I start to get nervous when I hear scriptures being read.
Whenever I hear it, I get nervous.
Too. Yeah, yeah. I think we have to start distancing ourselves from that kind of that kind of illusion.
Okay, Vincent, thank you very much for your opinion.
Thank you.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. When you do get on the air, could you be sure to turn your radio down all the way because we get a feedback loop when you don't do that. Let's take another call. Hi there, Armand DeMille, on the air.
Oh, good day, Armand.
Good day to you.
Good day, Bernard.
Good day.
I wish you both a joyful, healthy year as well as
thank
the audience. Armand, where to begin? This is my once-a-year phone call.
Great. Who is this?
Gino.
Gino, welcome. Gino, once a year is right.
Hey, thank you.
Nice.
So, I don't know, a couple of things. Once upon a time, you said that you weren't going to write a book because it would be limited.
Uh-huh.
But you do the radio show, which I find actually it would be a little more limited than a book because you put so much in a book to guide the folks with all your insights through the years.
Well, you know, I tell you something, Gino. I've written enough articles. There's enough information. And there is a book that I have written. There's one book that I wrote. I co-authored with somebody. But there's a thing about all of this stuff that I believe. Whatever I find out I believe today, tomorrow is questionable. You know, and it's really true. I mean, I've done this. I wrote one book about marriage. By the time I got finished with the book, my whole theory about it changed. I didn't believe it anymore because it was like 2 years later. So I find this difficult, and I find all the writers, all the people I meet who author books, they get kind of stuck in time. They get frozen in time. You know, they're frozen with this belief, and they have to sell the book. Well, you know, somewhere along the line, in fact, there's a secret here that I'll tell you, Gino. Somebody wrote a book about me. There's a book that's going to be coming out next year. It's going to be a popular book. It has me all over the place in it. So I figure, you know, let them show it, and I'm not going to put my time into trying to put it all into some belief system that I'm going to probably question tomorrow. Because last year, I remember I specifically believed one thing about the human mind and its interchange with the human body, and this year I feel very different about it. So I want to keep a flowing mind.
I hear you, Armand. I know you know that the wave of thought is always less than the ocean it's coming from, the spirit. I know you know that.
Yep.
And so in that sense, I agree with you. The making of books, there is no end. The reading of books, there be no end. But what I find, you offered a question with Bernard last week, that with all the thoughts about the one God and religion, why is there such conflict? You know, my take is on it, I think most of the folks who believe in things, and as Jung said, religion can be used as a defense against a spiritual experience, I think most of us are just too plain lazy to actually practice shutting our mouths, doing a practice where we actually experience what we're trying to talk about. And I think if all the different branches were to do that, which is in all the literature, scriptures, I think we'd come from a place of more compassion, humility, and patience that we know we can't bring down, reduce to words what love is. So we just live it out. And not to say we deny the brain. It's a useful, could be a playful kind of game to work with it. But to know it's limited, as you know, that's why I think you probably have kept from writing a book. And somebody who grabbed Lao Tzu at the end of his life to write those beautiful poems, he did write it, but they say so much with so little. Okay, so the other last point is that I enjoyed the speech yesterday. I actually got very teary at certain parts, the excitement, the hopes, the inspiration of it. Reverend Lowry really, really capped it off for me. You know, just his humor, and he was able to make me cry, actually, and make me laugh within a minute, if less than that. And I think that's actually genius for me when somebody could do that with me. And the last point is, Roberta Atti is going to be offering her milk products at Gary's place this weekend.
I think she's always had them there.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. She's going to be there in person, so I'll finally get to meet her as I did you last year. So not to take up too much time, I still appreciate your offerings. I'll still be listening, and I'm really glad you're still there. I thank you very much.
Gino, thank you for still being there. How many years have you been calling me?
I don't know. I'd have a hard time thinking about that. I think I've probably called you over the years, maybe around, I would say at least 7 times.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've been listening to you for 18.
Yeah, 18 years.
Yeah.
Almost since I was born. Thanks so much, Gino.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Yeah. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Bernard Starr. We're going to have to be going soon. But you know the people, I'll wait till that passes. The people are so beautiful. I mean, we have such gorgeous people. And of course, those of you who have been hurt by somebody who hustled you, those of you who have been hurt by what looked like a wise decision and now looks like it wasn't such a smart thing after all, you know, those of you who have been in pain and have kind of reduce everything you've got down to only a portion of what it was, I understand. I understand. It makes a lot of sense. We're in it together. So we've always shared we shared a lot of love together, you know, we shared a lot of abundance together. Sometimes it's time to share some tears. You know, and sometimes we got to just stand next to each other and feel really okay with each other in all the ways, including those who want to hustle us. I mean, give them a smile. They're welcome to it. This is Armand DeMille. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Bernard Starr, thank you so much for being with me again, as usual.
Well, thank you, Armand.
Sure. Okay, my friends, I'll be back with you tomorrow. If you want to send me an email, armand@brainlink.com. And I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1.